Coming up on KUCB News, GCI enters the next phase of Unalaska's fiber project, and APICTA pushes back against another CDQ group over pollock allocations. Stay tuned.
Programming on KUCB is made possible by Redfish Electronics. Located in the airport cargo building, Redfish sells computers, Androids, iPhones, iPads, televisions, headphones, and unlocked phones. Business hours can be obtained by calling 359-2205.
Redfish, we got stuff.
Good afternoon. You're listening to KUCB 89.7 FM on Alaska. I'm Laura Craigle with some local news on Thursday, July 5th, 2018. Two men you may see walking around town are part of GCI's push to bring high-speed internet to Unalaska. According to GCI Vice President Dan Boyette, their walks will help the telecommunications company to get a better idea of what fiber optic cable distribution might look like on the island.
Started Monday afternoon, July 2nd. Expect to see them throughout this week and into early next week. Measuring, they'll be wheeling off all the distances and essentially poking around just to determine exactly what it will take for us to do this bit of construction.
Boyette says the workers will measure main thoroughfares like Captain's Bay and Ballyhoo Roads, not the distances between homes and the road. About a month after their work is completed, Boyette estimates that GCI will finalize the project's design, and by the end of the summer, he'll start working with the city on permits. At this point, though, he says GCI still needs to establish whether the project is financially viable.
What our schedule is today is to get the business case approved before year-end 2018, and assuming we can do that, we will do a lot of the construction in Unalaska in the summer of 2019. It would then be in the summer of 2020 that we would put the fiber in the water from Kodiak to Unalaska.
GCI started talking about bringing fiber to the island last September. Initial estimates say the project would cost about $40 million. An Illinois man hired as Unalaska's fire chief last year has been sentenced to 36 years in prison. David D.J. Dunn was convicted of drugging and raping a subordinate at his going-away party last spring, just days before he was scheduled to leave his job as a Savoy, Illinois first responder and move to the island. City officials fired the 44-year-old after his arrest, but he was briefly on Unalaska's payroll. When Dunn was hired, former police chief Mike Holman described him as, quote, exceptionally qualified for the position, and former city manager Dave Martinson said he passed the city's vetting process without issue. Dunn previously worked in the region part-time for the medevac company Guardian Flight. Current city officials did not respond to KUCB's request for comment after Dunn's sentencing on Tuesday. Illinois media is reporting that he plans to appeal his sentence. Congressman Don Young is trying to renew the Magnuson-Stevens Act, the nation's fundamental fisheries law that hasn't been reauthorized since 2006. Young's bill would allow more flexibility for regional fishery councils. But as APRN's Liz Ruskin reports, it's also stirring up a dispute among groups that harvest pollock and other valuable fish in the Bering Sea.
Since the 1990s, towns and villages along the western Alaska coast, from Norton Sound to the Aleutians, have had a stake in the lucrative Bering Sea fisheries through the Community Development Quota Program. The communities, divided into six CDQ groups, are allocated a portion of the fishing quota, which they can fish themselves or lease to the fishing industry. By most measures, the program has been a success. In total, the six CDQ groups have amassed more than $1 billion in cash and assets. The larger groups spend more than $30 million a year to help their regions, with service programs, job training, scholarships, and local employment. But the largest group, called Coastal Villages Region Fund, says it's getting a raw deal. The group, known as CVRF, serves the Kuskokwim Delta, villages from Scammon Bay to Platinum. More than 9,000 people live in that area. It's 35% of the total CDQ beneficiary population, but they say they are allocated just 15% of the fish in the CDQ program. Art Severance, corporate counsel for CVRF, says some of the other CDQ groups have far fewer people and get the same or even more fish.
Right now the allocations are set the way Congress locked them in place in 2006, which was a result of political influence in the 1990s.
And, Severance says, the people in the 20 villages of the CVRF area have a higher poverty rate, less infrastructure, and fewer opportunities.
The household size alone in our communities is about twice as high as in the Aleutians. There's no real opportunity to buy houses, and so you have multiple generations living together, not necessarily because they want to, but because they don't have any other choice.
CVRF has been asking Congress for years to change the Magnuson-Stevens Act to include a CDQ formula based on population. Congressman Young isn't persuaded.
They have an argument. They just want more money.
Young says the CDQ groups themselves agreed what the rules would be, and now one of them, Coastal Villages, is lobbying Congress to change the allocation criteria.
There's no way am I going to be involved in taking fish from one native group and giving it to another native group. That was their agreement. And until they have a solidified position and say this is what we'd like to do, it's not going to happen.
Larry Cotter is retiring as the chief executive of one of the small CDQ groups, Aleutian Pribilof Island Community Development Association, or APICDA. He says the Coastal Villages Fund is off base.
This program was never based on population.
APICDA has about 400 people and gets 20% of the CDQ allocation. That means, as the Coastal Villages Fund sees it, APICDA has been able to deliver benefits of $750,000 per person over the past decade, while CVRF, because of its much larger population, has been able to spend less than $40,000 per person. But Cotter says the residents in the APICDA area, from Nelson Lagoon to St. George and Atka, are closer to the fish, and he says that's significant.
You know, it belongs to the people who live there. And if you look around the world, that same concept comes into play, that the folks closest to the resource are the ones that are in a position to benefit the most from utilizing those resources.
And Cotter says Coastal Villages is doing quite well. CVRF has more than $270 million in cash, fishing vessels, and other assets. Cotter calls it an economic juggernaut. Young's fisheries bill doesn't reallocate the CDQ fish, but it does change the rules for the umbrella association that speaks for the CDQ groups. The panel has been operating by unanimity. Young says that essentially gives any single group veto power. His bill says the panel can make decisions with only 5 of the 6 groups in agreement. Art Severance of the Coastal Villages Fund says that would allow the other CDQ groups to steamroll his. Congress is supposed to vote on Young's fisheries bill, H.R. 200, after the July 4 recess. Reporting from Washington, I'm Liz Ruskin.
There's been another reported outbreak of norovirus on an Alaska cruise ship. At least 38 passengers fell ill with a stomach bug late last month while sailing through Southeast. Now, as KTOO's Jacob Resnick reports, officials in Juneau say they want more of a heads up when there's an infectious outbreak.
The Centers for Disease Control publishes reports of outbreaks on cruise ships on its website. But that's not how the director of Juneau's emergency room heard about a recent one. Bartlett Regional Hospital's Kim McDowell first read about an infected Holland America ship on social media.
So I called the port agent to verify if there was any validity to it, and they did confirm that there was, but that they were at a level where they were able to contain it on the ship and didn't expect to have any patients coming our way.
A vessel with a large onboard outbreak, the Zaandam, recently left Juneau on its way north without any major reports of illness spreading into town. But McDowell said norovirus, which causes severe vomiting, diarrhea, and gastrointestinal distress, is something you don't want to be around.
But when you're talking about something so contagious as norovirus, it can really just spread and go rampant through the communities.
A day later, the Seven Seas Mariner called into Juneau. The CDC published a note on its website that at least 38 passengers had fallen ill and tests for norovirus came back positive. McDowell says,
I didn't hear anything about that one.
That may be because the CDC didn't post anything on its website until 5 days after the Regent Seven Seas cruise ship left Juneau. Those that regularly come into contact with cruise visitors would appreciate more notice.
There are certain cases where if they know in advance when they're coming to port, we'd certainly like to know that.
John Neary heads the Forest Service's Mendenhall Glacier Visitor Center. It's by far Juneau's most popular attraction. During the peak season, it receives thousands of cruise visitors each week.
Every day there's a concern, because whether or not there's been a recorded outbreak, there's always viruses on board these ships as well as, you know, with any large population of people. So we have to take measures every day about hand washing and not shaking hands and these kinds of things.
His staff often fall ill mid-season, he said, so he's appealed to cruise ship agents to communicate directly to his office when they know there's a ship carrying sick people coming into port.
We want to be welcoming here, and at the same time, we want to protect our own staff.
Meanwhile, those who suspect they've come into contact with norovirus should use plain old soap and water. Charlie Gribbins, infection preventionist at Bartlett Regional Hospital, said hand sanitizers don't work as well.
Alcohol isn't as effective on norovirus by sanitizing, so you physically want to lather up with soap and water to remove the virus from your hands.
Last year, the CDC reported 8 norovirus outbreaks on cruise ships nationwide. Half of those were on Holland America cruises in Alaska. In Juneau, I'm Jacob Resnick.
The next cruise ship scheduled to call on Unalaska is the Silver Explorer, operated by Silver Sea Cruises. The CDC inspected the luxury liner in May, giving it a passing sanitation score of 90 out of 100. The Silver Explorer is due in port in late August. And that's the news from Unalaska. I'm Laura Craigle, and you're listening to KUCB 89.7 FM. Find us online at kucb.org, and please stay tuned for your local and marine weather forecasts.